today, oh, first of all, I should just kind of announce, because I forgot to yesterday, that we have laid over the bill from yesterday. Just kind of laying there. And is that our? We have. All right, we now have a quorum. And so, Representative Jessup, have you perused the minutes of February 7th? He's on this committee? Well, what the heck? I thought he was. We'll go Representative Juergens.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I have, and I move the minutes.
All right, then, the minutes have been moved. February 7th, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries. Today, we will be hearing a couple of presentations. The Higher Education Asset Preservation Requests of the University of Minnesota and of the MinSCU system. And so we will begin with the University of Minnesota on their Higher Education Asset Request. Welcome to the committee, gentlemen. When you speak, please identify yourself for the record and let us know what you want.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's easy. We could be really short if we just want to jump to that part. Mr. Chairman, committee, thank you very much for the opportunity to present today. My name is Mike Bertelson. I'm the interim vice president for university services, so the facilities and construction component of the university.
My name is Brian Swanson. I'm assistant vice president for finance.
So today, we're glad to have the opportunity to present the university's number one capital request priority, higher education asset preservation and replacement, or HEPR as it's commonly known. For any new members on the committee who may not be familiar with this program, HEPR is a legislatively created category of bond funding that can only be used for renewing existing buildings. The legislative language restricts the use of HEPR to four primary categories of spending. You can see them listed in the slide: accessibility, health and safety, building systems, and infrastructure. HEPR cannot be used to make academic or program changes to buildings, however. When we have projects that make academic or programmatic changes to building, then we bring those projects forth as a separate line item appropriation request to you, where the legislature funds two-thirds of the project, example, Pillsbury or Tate. In cases where there are academic improvements that make sense to the university, we may fund the eligible project components with HEPR and then supplement the budget if necessary with additional university funds for ancillary programmatic improvements. The university is very thankful for the long and continued state investment in our facilities and the campuses. Because of this, we take our stewardship of these investments incredibly seriously. This goes through the entire life of buildings. We start out trying to build them right with the right kind of building construction standards with good, high-quality materials. We maintain it right with good preventive maintenance programs and stewardship through the life of the building. And together, those tend to help the university be able to carry a building well past its generally expected useful life. So it'll be a buildings of quite significant age, but we extend and use as far as we possibly can. However, no matter what, there is a time where that useful life is done and the building components need to be replaced. This is the role of HEPR. A good analogy for us is a car, or in this case, an old pickup. First and foremost, you can't use HEPR to buy a new car. That just doesn't work. Instead, the money is dedicated to make sure you get the maximum possible life and functionality out of your existing vehicle. Like a car, even if you do all the right maintenance activities, change the oil, filters, keep the air pressure up in the tires, there comes a time when it needs new tires, new brake pads, new engine components. Buildings are the same. We do the routine maintenance, but there comes a point when the life cycle of every building reaches when it needs a major investment of funds to keep it safe and functional. Windows need to be replaced. Roofs need to be replaced. Heating, cooling, electrical systems need to be upgraded. Building codes and other regulations change. Sometimes, many times, our buildings existed before fire sprinklers were even a requirement or before architects paid attention to disability access issues. This, of course, is where HEPR comes in and why it plays such an important role for both the university and Minnesota State. Before we move on to talk about project and this year's request, we want to say a few words about the process we use to select HEPR projects and to highlight several examples of urgent projects. The university allocates HEPR system-wide to all of our campuses on a formulaic basis. The formula is a ratio of campus size on one hand and facility condition on the other. The university maintains a comprehensive facility condition assessment program that uses a third-party inspection-based methodology. The outcome of the condition assessment is used to guide project selection. We use our HEPR projects from the facility condition needs assessment database, and on a regular basis use those third-party assessments and to review and update that information on all of our buildings to help us identify what our immediate and longer-term projects that need attention. Once potential projects are identified, we use a variety of qualitative factors to determine which projects to include on our project request on the limited $100 million that we have in front of you. We look at things like how bad is the problem, how likely is it to get worse soon, what is the risk to people or animals, is it more urgent or less urgent due to law changes or new codes, how significant is this facility condition impacting or limiting program need.
So there were several projects that we had included in last year's HEPR request that we had to get done between last session and this session. This request is largely a representation of the projects that we had in our 2016 HEPR request. There were five larger projects that we had to take care of this past summer. A roof on 717 Delaware, which houses a medicinal chemistry program serving the medical school, needed to be replaced. It was failing. There was a swine research facility where the atmosphere in the barn got so caustic that it was a health hazard, and that was one that we took care of with university funds. The boiler serving the North Central Research and Outreach Center in Grand Rapids was failing. It was a 1970s boiler that had just reached the end of its life. And then there were two projects, mechanical system projects, at the Duluth campus, Chena Hall and the Tweed Museum of Art, that had money from previous HEPR appropriations that they needed to move forward with to complete those projects, and so they had to find alternative campus funding for those projects. But there were other projects that did not get funded that we thought we should highlight as being examples of the kind of projects and the urgency of getting HEPR. So the pictures on the screen in front of you come from the university's Coleraine Minerals Research Lab on the Iron Range. I'd like to read just a brief bit from an email from the director when the water line that you see in the picture failed again. So he said, in late July 2016, the water main at our Coleraine facility failed again. According to the lab director, when this occurs 2 to 4 times annually, second time this year, there's no fire protection, no eye washes, and no safety showers. We routinely operate hazardous and high-temperature equipment at the lab. The team was operating equipment at the time, and they were able to safely turn off equipment and evacuate. No injuries were encountered. He went on to say that today's break entails 3 to 4 failures in the main line to the site. The Coleraine site manager is obligated to shut down the site and send everybody home. There's a significant cost to the Natural Resources Research Institute. On top of this repair, which typically costs between $5,000 and $20,000 for each occurrence, the interruption to clients and other impacts of the work continue to increase costs. The university has funded design on this project with a previous HEPR appropriation, had it intended to replace the water line with the 2016 appropriation, and has this on its request for 2017 again. A second example, again from the Duluth campus, is the Romano Gymnasium. The Sports and Health Center at the Duluth campus, it's the only gymnasium on the Duluth campus. It serves rec sports, the exercise science academic program, intercollegiate athletics, as well as Duluth community events. The mechanical system on this building is old and it can't maintain humidity, which means that the floor continues to buckle, and so they have to nail the floor down, and then which is supposed to be a floating floor, but then the nails pop, and so you end up with nail pop that can rip open knees or cause people to trip. Furthermore, when it snows, the structural load on the roof actually deflects the basketball hoops, which are mounted to the ceiling, out of regulation height. So during the course of a basketball game, they'll have to go and readjust the basketball hoop height to keep them in compliance for the game. I heard a comment about the chair, but I'm not sure if that was. Okay.
Continue.
I will continue.
I was having a pipe dream.
Mike Bertelson mentioned earlier, we do a comprehensive facility condition assessment on each of our campuses, but we bring in a third-party group of architects and engineers to review the condition of the buildings and to help identify priority projects for things that need to be dealt with immediately, things that need to be dealt with in the next 10 years. And we keep track of that on a regular basis and use that information in the decision-making about selecting HEPA projects. The last column on the slide is the total gross square footage at the campus in what we consider to be poor and critical condition. This is a metric that we watch closely and is one that's on the Regents scorecard for facilities. And HEPA plays an important role in holding the growth of the amount of square footage on each campus in poor and critical condition to a minimum to keep that number from growing. We also use the same information, facility condition assessment information, graphically as a quick means of showing where the priority projects are on each campus. What's in front of you here are the facility condition maps for both the Morris and the Crookston campus. And as an example, if you look at the Morris map, and it's a little hard to see, but maybe easier in your packet, the Blakely Hall is shown in red, and on our 2017 request, we have $150,000 of mechanical system improvement funding for Blakely Hall. And likewise, the Briggs Library, which shows as below average, there's only one restroom in the entire library, and it's not an ADA accessible restroom, and so that's a project that shows up in the 17 request. Well, HEPA is an important and the most important, most significant source of funding we have for doing asset renewal. It's not the university's only source of funding for asset renewal. We also set aside out of the university's operating budget repair and replacement funding for buildings. We fund utility projects out of our self-assessed utility rates on the Twin Cities campus. We charge building occupants the actual cost of the utilities for their buildings, and we build into the rate like a utility does some capital for maintaining the utility distribution. Where possible, we try and solve facility renewal problems by just taking the building completely offline. I think sometimes it's harder to demolish a building than it is to build a new one, but when we can take a building down completely, it solves solves all the facility renewal issues with that particular building. And in the health science education project, which is part of our 2017 request, that includes the demolition of two existing buildings, and the same with the plant growth facility where we take down the existing St. Paul greenhouse. So those are examples of where we're able to solve asset renewal problems by demolition. And then lastly, major capital projects, when we do a whole building renovation like the Pillsbury Hall project, which is in our request, when we do those kind of projects, we bring everything up to modern standards in those buildings, and so we're able to tackle a significant number of the facility renewal issues with those whole building renovations. So transitioning to just a few highlights from the university's 2017 HEPA request. Just as a reminder, HEPA is our number one priority, and in your packet there's a list of all of the projects that we would intend to complete with the $100 million. Of the request, almost half of our HEPA request relates to building envelope, and that's reflective of the fact that while not glamorous or fancy, it's essential as a first line of defense to keep the water out and keep the heat in. And so those become the first priority for HEPA funds, is to keep our buildings dry and to keep the occupants inside safe and the activities functioning. Examples of projects, the building envelope projects from this request: two large student classroom buildings, Wiley Hall, which is the largest classroom building on the West Bank, and Rutan Hall, which is the largest of the classroom office buildings on the St. Paul campus. These are both buildings that large numbers of students use on a daily basis.
and then the field house, which was a repurposed 1940s era airplane hangar, which is used by rec sports and kinesiology and athletics and other campus events. On the infrastructure side, we have the Colerain water system, which I spoke about earlier, and the dire need for that one. We have some extension of district cooling, where we have buildings that have obsolete, aging and obsolete chilling systems, and it's more efficient, more cost-effective, and provides better long-term reliability when we hook them up to district chilling. So we're extending our district cooling system to three of the arts buildings on the West Bank. And then Crookston, we've had a series of investments using 2012, 2014, and 2017 HEPR to modernize Crookston campus's electrical distribution system. That system had gotten so old that they were having brownouts and losing power in the winter, which then took down their heat. And we're in the process of stabilizing the electrical system at the Crookston campus. And then lastly, I believe, almost lastly, we have several of the life safety code improvements. Fire sprinklers in Johnston Hall, a 1920s building that has never been touched as far as bringing modern fire sprinklers into this. The sports and health project, which we talked about at Duluth, and then a library project on the St. Paul campus is building a disability access restroom in the St. Paul campus library. And then lastly, we have some mechanical system projects. Humanities at Duluth, Morrisari, an emergency generator replacement that serves the health sciences. The 1972 Harvest Gold emergency generator is still in place there in Moose Tower. And then a reference to the UMD project as well. That's a major project for the Duluth campus.
So with that, we'll just leave the full 2017 capital request in front of you, and we're prepared to take any questions you have of us now, or if you want to do that after Minsky's presentation, as you wish. Thank you.
Members, have you questions? Representative Hauser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I note on the health sciences, this gives us some indication of how costs are going up, because last year we had 66, and now it's 69. But I think in the governor's bill, it's still 66, unless I'm not remembering correctly. So he didn't re-solicit, or how's that going to work?
Mr. Chair, Representative, you're right. So because there was no bonding bill last year, we had knowing that time is money and the cost of inflation for projects, we had in our request to the governor and to you, we had put up an inflator. The governor felt didn't agree with including inflation for this project, and so at the $100 million request, we would we'll manage accordingly with whatever resources we're given.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I guess for either of you, I was looking at the HEPR list here, and are these projects then listed in priority as they are on this sheet? I notice you said that they could be adjusted to reflect conditions and final cost estimates, but assuming that everything remains pretty constant and your estimates are pretty close, is that the way on each of the campuses you would prioritize the different projects?
Mr. Berthelsen.
Mr. Chair and Representative, no, it's very difficult to sort of give a priority order for HEPR projects because we end up with so many different scenarios, and I know we continually try to respond to each of the requests for different dollar amounts. So there are certain cutoff points where it doesn't make sense to do some of the larger projects anymore. So we think of it as what set of projects makes sense at any given dollar amount. And so we sort of tend to answer the question, what would we fund at 100? And that's a list at 100 if there's, and we've provided, I think, submissions of what the portfolio would look like at different dollar amounts at the request of the committee.
Mr. Chairman, we've asked that question before, you know, at different funding levels, what what the priorities for HEPR might be. And, you know, I guess I knew the answer. And you said if it were 100, this would be your list with those adjustments.
Yeah.
But if, unfortunately, it were a different number, it would be interesting to have some feel for what the legislature is purchasing in the end.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson,
yes,
we've submitted some of those, I think, to the committee already, different dollar amounts, and we're prepared to answer any given number we're asked for.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would just like to correct one thing on the record, Mr. Berthelsen. Architects did consider accessibility prior to the ADA. It was just that clients didn't want to pay for it at that time. So it was something that had long been considered. I want to ask you a couple questions. One is specifically about some of the utility rates and the repair and replacement, because oftentimes when you replace aging mechanical systems, oftentimes your operating costs after a period of 4 to 5 years are greatly reduced. You make up that return of investment. So how is that factored into considering projects on the HEPR list? Mm-hmm. Do you try to include those to sort of reduce operating long-term costs, or do you hold them out a little bit separate, sort of as projects that pay for themselves over time?
Mr. Berthelsen.
Mr. Chair, Representative, the answer to that is sort of yes and. We do fund a variety of energy conservation projects ourselves, where we think that project can sort of self-fund itself within a reasonable amount of years, and we even sort of self, almost like an internal loan sort of program. The places where we tend to include them in a HEPR request is when there is an energy conservation component as part of a larger MEP project or an HVAC project, where the return on investment from energy savings, which though real, is not sufficient to sort of pay back internally in a reasonable time frame. And so a whole building mechanical system will have lots of renewal, and energy conservation will contribute, will help it long term, but is not enough to pay for itself. And so that we tend to put those sort of projects more in HEPR.
Mr. Chair, and if I could just follow up with that. So do you use a standard return on investment of like 5 years? You might submit a project for HEPR less than 5 years. You might finance it somehow yourself?
Riffleson.
Mr. Chair and Representative, yes. We tend to focus on self-funding anything with 6 years or less. And beyond that, we might reach, depending on the project, we may reach a little further. If it gets beyond that, it tends to be part of a larger project than maybe a HEPR request.
Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Berthelsen, we have a nice round figure of $100 million for the HEPR request. My questions are, how do you arrive at this these estimated costs for each individual project and things? And what has your track record been in terms of hitting these estimated costs?
Mr. Riffleson.
Mr. Chair and Representative, so there's two parts to that. How do we come up with them? We referred earlier to the facility condition assessment. So every so many years we have this third-party evaluator come look through the campus and help give some sense of priority. One of the things they also do is put estimates toward those projects. This is those that are, especially the smaller ones, we tend to just use that as our estimate, the smaller kind of projects. The things that are much larger, we will go further and fund a pre-design. And so we will hire architects and engineers just as we would for a standalone project. We'll conduct a pre-design for the larger one and use that for the estimate. I'd say overall our track record has been pretty good. There's been a great advantage at the state because we fund HEPR as a block grant, a block appropriation. When we come in under for any given project, that money goes right back to the pool, and we have the next project ready to go and launch that one. So we have a great track record of spending the money quickly and having lots of projects ready. The only reason all of it's not, you know, even the little piece that's not under contract, which is about 5% of the 2014, is because of projects that came in under budget, and then we had to start another one. So we, as soon as we get the appropriation, we have projects lined up and funded is allotted to them. So I'd say a pretty strong record, not exactly, but we get to, don't have to be quite as exact because they can be over or under a little bit total, and we manage to the final dollar amount.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Oakland?
So, Mr. Bertholson, so you're saying that the if there are any cost savings from this $100 million or whatever it happens to be mm-hmm. this time around, it goes back into the HEPR fund?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, that's true. And in fact, the one addition component of that is if it is saved for any given place, we leave that money on that campus. So if a project, HEPR project in Duluth, happens to be under budget, we don't then take that savings and put it in Morris or the Twin Cities. It stays on that campus because each campus we have a prior, you know, a list of needs, and that's how the appropriate, that's how the statute is written too. That funding is allowed to stay and sort of reallocated and spent as long as it meets the criteria of the HEPR statute.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Buglow.
Then on a slightly different subject. I noticed that a couple of things, for instance, item line 69 at Twin Cities campus, we're phasing a project that happens to be phase three. What is the effect of cost for phasing? In other words, is it costing more to phase some of these projects rather than do them all at once? Are there any cost savings?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Riffleson.
Thank you. And Representative Uglum. It's unusual for us to phase HEPR projects. That's the exception and not the rule. This particular one application was just too significant to try to take on all at one time. In general, I agree with your analysis that to do it all at one time is generally and almost always the most cost-effective way to do it. In this particular case, because of it was impacted largely based on how much of the program you could relocate at one time to. There's a cost of moving people out and how much of the program can be displaced. And so that played into the need to do it in this way. Each of these phases was significant in size enough. I don't think we really had too much of a disadvantage when it came from a cost perspective. But your rule of thumb that doing it at one time is more cost effective, I fully agree with.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hausman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. By the way, did you notice that Representative House has come back to give us a hand, apparently? We're lucky to have him.
No, I just need some money.
That was a former representative and chair of this committee, Larry House.
So just sort of following up on the questions that you were asking, isn't there, I seem to recall there's a requirement that every January, U of M and MinSCU report to us on all of the HEPR stuff. Maybe, Mr. Chair, you've gotten that from them. Is that what I recall?
Ms. Berthelsen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, that's correct. We do have if you want, we brought copies of the summary of that spending report, which has been delivered to both the House and the Senate and the chairs of the committees. But we did bring a high-level summary of the totals.
Thank you. Other questions? I was wondering, has Pillsbury Hall's prioritization changed from the last time?
Mr. Chair, no.
And just to clarify a little bit, don't hold me to any figures that I throw out here. But let's say, okay, you're asking for $100 million and we did $80 million. Now, lopping off the last 20% in each category in terms of prioritization wouldn't be the correct method to take. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, in regard to HEPR itself?
Yes,
or,
yes.
That would be correct. We would, depends on, as I said, the We have some very lots of very small projects and some very large ones, depending on the kind of the amount of money that's available. The mix and match of which projects sort of fit together from a priority would be a little different.
So when we come up with an amount, it might be good to consult with you.
Mr. Chair, we'd appreciate that and be glad to provide you feedback very, very quickly. We're prepared to turn that around.
Okay, thank you. Representative Oakland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Along that line, you mentioned that these are not prioritized. The 88 items in our list are not prioritized. I think this committee would probably find it easier to look at various projects, and if we do have some monetary constraints, it would be nice to see some prioritization on this list. How come we didn't do that?
Mr. Brooks. Chair and Representative,
Mr. Chair, Representative, if I could just use this as an example, the Duluth campus. At $100 million, Duluth's share of the HEPA appropriation would be $8.8 million, and that would allow them to do a $7.5 million investment in the sports and health system mechanical system. If, for example, there was only a $50 million appropriation, a $4.4 million appropriation wouldn't be enough to do the mechanical system, and they would have to add maybe three or four different projects that aren't even on this list to make up for the 4.4, to bring them back up to the total. So from a prioritizing scenario, their priorities as a campus are going to change dramatically whether they have 8.8 to spend or 4.4 to spend. And so what we've done in the past is provided scenarios at about any dollar value the committee would want to know of what would we buy for $50 million, what would we buy for $75 million. And we can provide that, but we try and give the campus a chance to respond to how their priorities would change based on the dollars available.
Representative Ugel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what you're saying is this list is fluid in terms of whatever is appropriated. You would find a way to come up with other projects that would fit the monetary parameters.
That's true.
That's correct.
And behind this $100 million, we have several other $100 million of projects who wish that they were on this list and didn't get to make this one. And so the way the statute has been written is, has been up to Minnesota State or the University of Minnesota to set to fund and pick projects based upon what happens. So there are, of course, times when we predict sort of to the best of our knowledge, the condition of every roof and boiler and heating system. But by the time, from the time we give you a draft list to the time that the appropriation is ultimately made, we may have a roof that fails and now becomes the top priority. Or we may have a boiler that has failed and now that becomes the top priority. So we do the best we can to based on the conditions of our knowledge, but we will use these dollars to hit the top priority at the moment the appropriation's made and mix and match. But as Mr. Swanson said, we are glad to provide scenarios that, which hopefully would answer your question about priorities. What's the priority at 100? What's the priorities at 80 or 50 or 40? Whatever numbers you would want, we're glad, we're not resisting giving you priorities for those pools. It's just hard to put them in a 1 to 88 list.
Representative Oakland.
Well, I think that would be very helpful for all of us. Mr. Chair, I think you're driving at that, too, that we'd like to see some type of prioritization. Mm-hmm. Dollars are scarce. Dollars are tough. We'd like to fund everything we possibly can. But everybody has their projects that they need. Thank you.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, Representative, just to say we understand that, and we would look to the committee to give us whatever direction of whatever dollar amounts you would like. And, of course, the other thing is on the annual report that Representative Hausman referred to, we do report back to exactly how much money we spent on every given project as far back as any of those appropriations until they haven't been spent. So we do return back and give you those actual details. And we're glad to meet whatever kind of scenarios you would like to see.
Representative Carlson?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I asked a question earlier that was similar to what the last two questions were our members were dealing with. And the reason that I asked about priorities at the time, if this was in priority, was if you look at number 88, it says roof and skylight replacement. So roofs. And if you look at number 80, that's roof replacement. And some of you may have heard me tell this story before, but years ago before we created Minsku and each system would come in separately, the state use came in and they had listed their projects in priority, and they had 11. And number 11 was roof replacement. And so I asked the question, I said, are any of those roofs leaking? And Chancellor Carruthers at the time, he was a pretty quick thinker, he said, Mr. Chairman, he said, roofs have just become our number one priority, before he answered the question. And so that's what I was picking up on, Mr. Chairman, when I asked if these were listed in priority, because I didn't ask if the roofs were leaking. But, you have to secure a building, in my view, before you, if it was our house, we'd put a new roof on before we'd build a new porch if we were doing some work on our homes. And so that's why I asked that question, because there are some projects. I remember a tour through Falwell Hall and how it got in that condition at the time, and this was a few years ago, but that's a beautiful building built, I think, in 1890. And you could see on the upper level, the upper floors, because of the leaky roofs and what have you, where the stain from the water running down was. And we also, at that same site visit, and that's one of the values of site visits, you really get a good feel. There was electrical wiring in some of those offices that was a disaster waiting to happen as well. And so that's why I ask about priorities, where, the life safety comes into play, things like your leaky roofs. If you don't take care of them in a timely manner, it's only going to cost the state or the university that much more later. And that's quite frankly what happened to us with Falwell Hall. It had been delayed so long for whatever reason that it turned out to be much more expensive to redo the damage to the building that could have been prevented probably with an earlier roof replacement. So that's an important question that we ask, how things are prioritized. It's not necessarily the list, but what kinds of things are prioritized under any given number.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, we put back on this, one of the slides in the presentation goes just to that point, Representative Carlson, what are the project selection criteria? And we know that there's times when something's about to fail or puts a person at risk, if we think safety is at risk. Those things rise straight to the top of the list.
And, Mr. Chairman, that's why I asked if these were in priority list, because number 88 was roof.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
That the same as the Chancellor did, it now became number one.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just thinking here, MnDOT, which has a great deal more larger number of state assets, has a plan in which they prioritize over multiple years. And I'm not quite sure why we couldn't do something similar here, and it would be beneficial, because as we look forward, then we can look at, this is where, we anticipate this coming. And there's adjustments from time to time because there's something that fails that you didn't expect or things like that. But I think it would be reasonable to do that, and the legislature could then, therefore, look more at the long-term plans of how they're going to address some of these needs. What I feel like is every biennium we come back and they say, well, here's our list. And it's not that I don't trust the list, but it seems to be just kind of like, well, here's what we have this year, and here's what we have this year. And I see a benefit to having, getting back to the prioritization of saying, here's state assets, here's what needs to be done. Maybe it can't be a 20-year plan, but certainly a 5-year plan or a 10-year plan is reasonable. Maybe that's something that we should work towards.
Mr. Berthelsen, do you have anything like that now?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes, I will say in two pieces. One is for the major capital projects outside of HEPR, we do exactly have a 6-year capital plan that's built just that way. For HEPR, we found that We have gone out as far as 6 years, which would be if we, our standard has been $100 million for every state request. So we've had up to $300 million worth of priorities sort of laid out at times. We haven't always done that because the history of funding for HEPR tends has not been, if it was a predictable amount, if we knew that every time, every 2 years, no matter what, we were going to be kind of very closely the same amount of money, it'd be much easier to make that sort of long-term planning and to just allot it. We ask for $100 million each time. I think 60 sort of been the high water mark, sometimes as low as 40. And so what one request can oftentimes, one request often can become a four or longer request for your plan. So, and in the meantime, some of the same things Representative Carlson identified, now the roof, which was okay 2 years ago or 4 years ago, now has become our leading priority. So we're not opposed to, we have lists that go well beyond, even with HEPR, beyond a two-year time period. And we've done a lot of additional planning to say which buildings we think are meant to stay, want to keep and maintain for a long time, and which ones we plan to slowly turn off or decommission or even demolish. And so we do have longer-term kind of 20-year plans for which buildings to maintain and which ones to sort of disinvest ourselves of. It's harder, again, with an inconsistent revenue appropriation amount, it's harder to kind of lay out a predictable plan. But we do have kind of sets of projects that go well beyond just the 2 years.
Representative Miller?
Mr. Chair, and I think it would be good for us to have view of those plans so that we can make intelligent decisions here. I understand that you're coming and saying, can we do this much? But when we can do this much, but then in negotiations, the way they go in government, the example that you gave where, well, if we have $10 million, we can do this, but if there's $4 million, and I know you didn't quite mean it this way, but it comes across as, well, we can probably find a way to spend that $4 million too, it makes a little bit of a plan. If we see your 20-year picture, we can have better discussions of this is why we better push it a little bit more money because this is why, rather than here's what our request is depending on what we get. It then comes back and we figure out something to do with that. So I think having some of these plans that it sounds like you already have would be good for us to have in our hands. So if you know that there's going to be a building that's phased out over 20 years, let's prioritize what that means. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Any response?
Mr. Chair and Representative, we'd be glad to work with whatever kind of added information would maybe make sense. I mean, I think we put up the slide about the almost $4 billion of projected need. And so we have, I don't mean to say we would have to come up with a list. We have plenty of lists that would overwhelm pages, many feet of projects. It's just a matter of which ones do we prioritize at what given dollar amount. So, we have many of them lined up. It's just how far out do you give those lists? So I'd be glad to maybe with the committee staff try to answer your question in as far out in kind of a format, and we can maybe send some examples of sort of some of the planning that we've done, and that may be more helpful to answer your question, and we'd like to do that.
Thank you. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm hoping I'm not beating a dead horse here on the priorities and whatever, but I just want to talk about health and safety a moment. Certainly it looks like, I'll just take the UMD Romano Gym. I just wanted to know if you've paid out any claims to students or faculty or community members who have been injured because they were playing in the gym, they were performing, they were doing something, and that would be a way to additionally prioritize the need.
Mr. Chair, Representative, not to my knowledge, but I can't say that for sure. So we can check. I just don't have anybody that would know that right here. But we will follow up on that, not to my knowledge.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Swanson.
Representative, I believe that the current practice to prevent that from happening is that they have a group of students with hammers that walk the court periodically during the game looking for nail pops so that they've managed to avoid that situation.
Representative Poppy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to follow up on that also. I mean, I think that certainly we can talk about damage to buildings, and we can talk about how when roof is leaking, how that's going to impact. And we need, it sounds like you can use a lot of money to make repairs. And definitely there are priorities, and there are some things that are a little bit more. But are there other economic kind of consequences to not providing you the assistance based on whatever your priorities are? So it would either be in lost wages or in additional costs to students, faculty, staff, community, animals, whatever.
Ms. Berthelsen.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I'd say yes, I think with all of these, there are a series of continued risks of increased risk. One is the one Representative Carlson had mentioned. If you don't stop, fix the roof in time, the water damage will, potential water damage to the building will grow exponentially and very fast. I think the, and so some are more quantified, like energy savings that was referred to earlier. If you don't sort of address certain components of the building, you'll continue to have energy loss, and that's a financial or easier to identify. The environmental risk for worker safety issues are a little bit harder to quantify. You can do it post-event, which we hopefully avoid. It's hard to predict which one is going to lead to a problem when. And when is the sprinkler and the smoke alarm system is going to be actually needed and used versus maybe you didn't have one and they didn't ever get used. So what did you prevent from happening is harder to quantify. We do, certainly from a risk management, pay attention to damages. So we've had, for example, in the Mayo building, the plumbing is ancient, and it's just hard to know which pipe to replace. We've had a series of floods. Almost every year there's some kind of flood in that building. And we can track, we know what those losses are from an insurance perspective and a property loss. It's harder to quantify the impact of program and lost time to recover and deal with that. So some of those we can quantify, and others are a little harder.
Rosa Poppy.
Thank you, and maybe one more. So do I understand that the UMD Romano gym is the primary gym used for the athletic basketball teams? So when you're saying that you have people that are walking the court to put down nails, I mean, this sounds like it's a 1920s kind of experience for some students to be playing on that court, that basketball court. Are there any teams that are refusing to come to UMD to say, you know, this is not, and is that, you know, I know sports is a big deal. And the University of Minnesota seems to have, in many other ways, are concerned about sports and different aspects. And I'm just wondering if that's a financial loss to UMD campus, and also how that impacts just your overall athletic standing throughout the system that they're playing in.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Griffelson.
And Representative, I'd say two things. One, we don't want to try to oversell the problem or try to undersell the problem. It's a real issue, and it will continue to get worse. It's not currently I don't want to overstate, it's not the entire floor, every board.
Okay.
I can imagine, the visual would be 1,000 hammers hitting the floor all at one time. It's not to that kind of place. And so it's not been that pervasive. It tends to be around the kind of from the edges working its way in. So I don't know if it's really in the center of the court where they're playing as much, but it is where I've seen it. It's getting worse, and we know it won't get better until we are able to fix the HVAC system and then make the investment in the floor. People haven't stopped coming yet. I think they've been able to maintain it and make sure it's safe enough to use.
Okay. Kind of along these lines, I'd like to point out to the committee, and many of us were there, but several years ago at Rochester, we were touring the campus there and were informed that in this one classroom that needed some work on the roof, that in a rainstorm, a tile had fallen down and hit a student on the head. Do you remember that, Representative Hausman? Did you give your hand up?
Yes.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just assume that the nature of asset preservation is there are emergencies and urgent things, and that if we don't pass a bill for a couple of years, you are probably looking for funding elsewhere to do some of those projects anyway on their own, just because the nature of them is such that you can't wait for the next bonding bill, so that there's got to be another option for you for those emergency sorts of things.
Mr. Berthelsen.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hausman, yes, correct. Just as in the presentation, we identified five projects which were on last year's HEPA request, which we felt could not wait and needed to be addressed for a safety and operational perspective and just couldn't be patched anymore. And so in those cases, we redirected internal repair replacement dollars and dug more into some of the campus reserves that could have been used maybe for something else and directed toward this. There's a limit to how much that is, of course, but yes, if there is an emergency, we are not going to let, we're trying to limit that it puts people or animals or kind of things at risk. Those are things that we'll have to deal with.
And then, Mr. Chair, if I could, to the issue of the mechanical engineering building, which we visited a number of years ago when you first put that on the list, at the time we were confused that the number was so big for that one project. We wondered, when does it become a building renovation and you seek geobonding as opposed to asset preservation? I see now you're at phase three of renewal. It's still a fairly large number, I don't know if you were around at that point, but that's when we sometimes get confused about when it becomes a geobonding request for building renovation and when it becomes asset preservation.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Ruthless.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hausman. So first of all, the good news is there's no phase four.
Go ahead.
So we'll start with that. Phase three is the end. And I think, yes, I understand. This is a little bit unusual that we would usually, when we would have such significant HEPA projects part of a building, they tend to come with a building which no longer can meet the programmatic need as well. And so it really does become a standalone project with a one-third, two-third split as a separate line item. Because the amount of programmatic renovation or change is significant. In this particular case, mechanical engineering, maybe being the engineers that they are, were quite satisfied with the layout. It didn't require, we weren't changing where the walls were. We weren't changing the layout of the building. It was a lot of HEPA components all needing attention sort of at the same time. And as had been mentioned earlier, we could have tried to spread those projects and those HEPA required projects over maybe 20 years, but we felt there was some efficiencies of scale to do them in larger chunks, and so we're dealing with them a wing at a time. And so that's sort of the way we had gone after it, the north wing, and what's left is the west wing. And so instead of just doing the windows and then coming back and just doing the roof and then just doing the electrical and the elevator and so on, we wanted to bundle them and get them for an efficiency of scale. But for this case, there wasn't a significant, unlike Tate, which was the old physics and is now becoming geology, it was a significant change in the floor plan and the layout and the use of the building. That's a standalone project. In this case, it was just a long collection of a building which had a significant and long list of HEPA eligible projects. And we weren't really changing, we didn't change the program or the users or the purpose or the any of those components. So that's why it continued to be a HEPA project, but unusual. It's certainly unusual to be that large.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Swanson. Mr. Berthelsen?
Thank you. If you need to move on, I did have...
We do need to move on, Representative Carlson.
I'll catch him online.
Otherwise, the Minsky guys will come after you. Welcome to the committee. Would you state your name for the record, please?
Good afternoon, Chair of all committee. My name is Brian Yolitz. I serve as the Associate Vice Chancellor for Facilities for the Minnesota State System. I'm the facilities guy for your state college universities. And, Mr. Chair, you have not lost your mind. The falling ceiling tile was at Rochester Community Technical College. I think you've heard about that a couple times in your visits there.
Yeah.
So thank you for your time this afternoon. My purpose is relatively simple. It's provided members an overview of the Minnesota State academic facilities, give you a sort of a baseline of what we have and where we're at, and then outline our facility asset preservation needs for our colleges and universities as they just try to support students in the higher education opportunities we represent. There are 54 campuses within the Minnesota State System. These campuses are directly connected to 47 communities in every corner of the state. They represent access to affordable higher education opportunity for all Minnesotans. In total, the system has 28 million square feet of facility space, and it represents roughly one-third of the facility space owned by the state of Minnesota. Between Minnesota State System, the University of Minnesota, which also oversees roughly one-third of the state's building assets, and all their state agencies rounds out the entire pie of buildings owned by the state of Minnesota. Our campuses are as diverse as the students we serve. 80% of our Minnesota State's facility space, or about 22.6 million square feet, is academic in nature and is served by general obligation bond funding for capital improvements, as well as asset preservation, and tuition and state appropriation provides for the day-to-day operations and maintenance of our facilities, of those facilities. The balance of our space is classified as auxiliary and includes residence halls, student unions, dining facilities, and parking ramps. User fees provide both for the capital investments as well as the day-to-day operations of those facilities. For the most part, Minnesota State's facilities are considered middle-aged, with over two-thirds of our academic space built before the 1980 and is rapidly reaching 40 years of age or more. It's important to note that over 50% of our academic facility space was built between 1960 and 1975 during a period which was characterized as quick flash construction, where we saw relatively low quality construction practices and low end building materials and components. Annually, we use a tool called Capital Renewal Facilities Reinvestment Renewal Model, or FRRM, by Sightlines to assess and understand the replacement costs, life cycle timeframes for our building components, and current condition of our facilities and their major components. Very much similar to what you heard from the University of Minnesota of their assessing their facilities, as well as I think this committee heard from the Department of Administration. They use the ArcaBus system to assess other state agency facilities, or the DNR, or corrections, or veterans. This model that we utilize is a nationally recognized facility assessment tool and methodology used by more than 200 colleges, universities, and seven state systems across the United States. For 2016, the FRM process indicated that our 22.6 million square feet of academic space has an estimated replacement value of $7.8 billion. Associated with this space is an estimated backlog of maintenance, building components and systems that have reached or exceeded their useful life, totaling $783 million. This means for every square foot of academic space, we have nearly $35 of work that needs to be done on building components and systems that have exceeded or expanded their anticipated useful life. The relationship or the ratio between backlog of maintenance and replacement value is called Facility Condition Index. Our Facility Condition Index, or FCI, is 10% or 0.10. This is considered on the threshold of good to fair facilities and is on par with other higher ed systems that we monitor across the nation. In addition, our FRM models and takes a look at what is coming for the next 10 years, what systems are going to meet their useful life and need replacement or renewal. That totals right now, estimated total is $1 billion as our physical plant ages and building components and systems reach the end of their expected life. I think Mr. Burleson commented on a same type window type concern of a number around $4 billion dollars. So it's a large sum that's associated with our physical plant that exists today. Said another way, the average square foot of existing academic space at a Minnesota State College University campus represents an asset preservation need of $80 a square foot to catch up with the backlog of maintenance and address the anticipated renewal needs in the campuses for the coming 10 years. This chart digs a bit into some of the numbers, and I'd like to go over each one of them with you. In the top left, you see the backlog of maintenance in our academic facilities that has grown by over $150 million, or 25%, since 2010. The 10-year renewal forecast that I just mentioned is on the top right and shows the anticipated costs of work needed to upgrade building components between now and 2026. It shows a significant peak in 2018 and 2022, but totals $1 billion over the 10-year period. The pie chart in the lower left shows what the majority of our backlog of maintenance, that $783 million, looks like in terms of building components that needs addressing. Mechanical systems or HVAC systems represent the largest chunk, as we have done a lot of work in, as roofs, as Representative Carlson noted, we spent a lot of time on roofs in the past. But we continue to address building exteriors like windows, roofs, and tuck pointing, which makes up another large chunk of our needs in terms of our current backlog. We recognize that we can't do all of this at once and have sought systematic funding to make this happen. So strong and consistent asset preservation funding through HEPR is critical to keeping our colleges and universities warm, safe, and dry, and our students, to allow our students to learn and succeed. HEPR has been and continues to be our board's number one capital investment priority, with our focus on stewardship and taking care of the space that we have. This chart shows HEPR funding requested in the even or bonding year against the actual funding provided in that year, as well as funding provided in the following odd or off bonding year. I know there's conversations that maybe every year is a bonding year, but this kind of scoops the two together and meets that, what the actual funding was over a two-year period. Since 2000, our board has systematically sought more than $960 million in HEPR funding across the system as its number one priority, indicated by the blue columns. The green columns indicates actual HEPR funding provided in the even or bonding year, as well as the following odd or off bonding year. Total HEPR funding over this period is just over $400 million and represents about 43% of the requests that we've had. Utilizing, as Mr. Burleson noted, a session law that allows us to move money from capital projects when we have low bids into asset preservation on the campus, we have moved about $11 million worth of work off of capital projects into asset preservation work since 2008. In addition, our colleges and universities contribute about $30 million annually of their own operating dollars, that's tuition and state appropriations, to help with facility upkeep and preservation work. Bars and charts only tell part of the story, and sometimes pictures and bus trips to campuses tell and provide a lot more fidelity on the issues. On January 20th of 2017, Roger Brose, the facility director from Minneapolis Community and Technical College, reported a significant leak in the roof at the Management Education Center known as MEC, the MEC building on the MCTC campus. The results damaged offices and academic spaces underneath and directly impacted not only college resources, but also impacting MCTC's partner, Metropolitan State University, faculty and students. This $3.6 million roof project was originally identified in 2011 and was the college's number one HEPR request in 2016 and remains there today. At Southwest Minnesota State University, this picture tells the story of a middle-aged buildings that require components that need replacement. This committee visited and witnessed the facilities director, Cindy Holm, walk us through the linkages where the corrosion and seals around the windows had failed and with water intrusion before we went to the football stadium, and I think some got an opportunity to run around and before a good meal on the SMSU campus, something to look forward to in the future. Finally, at Winona State University, the university's number one priority is repairing the roof in Phelps Hall, the oldest building on campus. This historically appreciated building suffers continuous leaks in water infiltration and insulation damage and is failing. the $1.45 million roof replacement, remove and replace the relayment, and correct the problems that are impacting classrooms and learning spaces of the facility. Mr. Chair and committee, to wrap up, your state colleges and universities represent a large facility footprint of state assets and are a great resource to the state of Minnesota. These campuses and buildings are an integral part in providing access to higher education and delivering an extraordinary education to Minnesotans. Our existing facilities, like those of the University of Minnesota and other state agencies, are aging and increasingly in need of asset preservation and upgrade to serve Minnesotans. The costs, both in terms of capital investments needed to do the work itself and the operational costs of deferring the work, are growing. I would argue our existing state buildings are much like Minnesota's roads and bridges. They're in much need of repair. You just don't see or drive over the potholes that exist in our buildings, in our roofs, our exteriors, our mechanical systems, our utility systems. Together, we need asset preservation funding that is substantial and equally important, predictable, and timely to arrest the growing costs and keeping the facilities we have and need warm, safe, and dry. Thank you for your time and attention on this matter this afternoon. And subject to any questions, this concludes my presentation. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Yulitz. I'm going back to the prioritization. Does each campus has a list of priorities? Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, indeed. Each of our institutions has a comprehensive facilities plan and also participates in the FRM model I talked about of assessing their facilities. And they know, based on the craftsmen who work on the facility components, they're able to rack and stack and prioritize those projects. We provide them, integrate them for you, and when staff calls and says, can I have a list of $110 million or $55 million or $20 million, I'll give you a list if you ask for $150 million. I'll give you that list as well. But we can certainly provide that based on prioritization from our campuses and try to integrate that together.
Well, thank you, Mr. Yulitz. And would that be, potentially, depending on how much money you would get through this, would it be possible that some campuses would not have any of their priorities realized, but others might have a couple or more?
Mr. Chair, we try to move money around the system as best as possible, but indeed there are times when we've got life safety issues, we've got direct impact to student and faculty and staff health in terms of air quality, that we may have two urgent needs on campus that would require us to fund two ahead of some other on one campus or institution versus another.
Okay. Questions, members? Representative Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a brief question about this handout here about all the schools, and it does say to the far right, campus priority, and some of them are listed 1, 2, 3, depending upon the campus. Now, is that specifically to the need of the project where campus priority is listed as 1, 2, 3? Is that how that specific facility is seeing that priority when we talk about priorities?
Mr. Chair, Representative Frank, indeed, we look to our presidents. They're the ones who have to deliver and provide a safe working and learning environment conducive and to keeping students, recruiting them. We look to the presidents to make those calls. We certainly ask them to use, much like the University of Minnesota, life safety issues need to be addressed first, but then work our way through a prioritization of urgency of need and impacts on campus and delivering on our academic programs.
Any other questions? Okay. Representative Becklin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chancellor. On page 2, I guess one of the troubling points that I had is in the two middle bullets, built between 1951 and 75 and 75 and 90, you've got low-quality construction and quick-flash construction. So on your requests, are you taking into account that this is poor quality and going to beef it up, or are we putting a quick-flash Band-Aid on it?
Mr. Chair, Representative, indeed, we try to build, when we leave a facility, we want that facility to be intact for the next 40 to 50 years. We build a substantial roof. We've been at times accused of being too stringent in our roof requirements. Our goal is to keep a facility warm, safe, and dry with an exterior that allows us to do things for a long term inside. We're not using blue tarp and duct tape and moving on to the next project. We want to fix things and fix things once.
Representative Eklund?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess what I'm getting at is these kind of things are probably more expensive to try to fix something that was done in not as good a manner when it was first built, and is that taken into account too?
Mr. Yolick?
Mr. Chair, indeed, Representative, when we do a pre-design, we take a look at just how deep is the work going to be required, the complete replacement, or is it just an enhancement, or is it just a major overhaul? And then depending on how what the condition is, you know, each campus could have a different level of need, a complete replacement or a deep overhaul. But indeed, that's part of the analysis that goes into to developing the project and the actual cost for it.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions, members? Well, then, thank you, Mr. Yolitz. I'll just announce that next week our meeting schedule is a little bit up in the air yet, so pay attention to your email. We'll try to let you know. Otherwise, if there is no other business, this case is closed.